continue with this series of training the 12. And, you know, we kind of have a general plan of where we're headed when we get through with this, of the training of the 12, which we're looking at both the perspective of Jesus as he makes disciples and the disciples as they learn from Jesus and as they follow him. And we think the direction we're going with this is that we'll move into the book of Acts when we complete this. And that'll basically be the first book of this next Building on Firm Foundations as we work through the rest of the New Testament. After we complete the book of Acts, we'll change that to another night of the week. So we'll probably go back to another night of the week. We don't know yet if that'll be a Sunday night or another night of the week. But that'll be an opportunity to complete what you started in Firm Foundations. So it'll be, you've gone through basically the Old Testament. We'll start with, we'll start with Romans. And we'll move through the rest of the New Testament all the way to Revelation. So you can be praying about that, looking forward to it. But for now, this is where we are, the training of the 12. And, you know, going through the Gospels, it's a little bit different. You know, as we have gone through, as David mentioned, 1st and 2nd Peter, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, we've gone through these books of the Bible. But this, we're not going through just one particular Gospel. We're not just doing a general study. We're kind of specifically, we're looking at the relationship of Jesus and the disciples. And I have to tell you, the Gospels I find more difficult than the rest of the New Testament. And a lot of that is that it's like the germ, it's like the seed of what is going to be fully known later. And so there's some mystery to it. And you notice if you read through the Gospels, Jesus says some things and you go, well, I don't know if I understand that. I've been reading the Bible a long time. I don't know if I understand all. And it's more fully explained later by Paul, by Peter, by the other apostles. So, in some ways, it makes the Gospels a little more, it makes them a little more difficult to wrestle with. But there's such value that we are getting these words, this teaching, in a sense, from Jesus himself. And so, while it's, we have to wrestle with the truths a bit, the impact, if we'll grab a hold of these things, the impact is tremendous. So today, we're going to look at three things. And these are three things that Jesus wanted his disciples to get a hold of. If you see these men, these 12 men, 11 really, are going to, they're going to be the one, they are going to be responsible to share all these things. So the church is going to be built on Jesus, but on the teaching. These guys are going to be the foundation of the church. So he's going to give them the thing. He's going to give them these seeds of truth, and they're not ready. They are not ready. And, you know, this is such the, that in itself gives you a picture of Jesus. Because, you know, when Jesus calls you, it's like, sell the farm. You know, you belong to him now. There's no room. There's no room for partially following Jesus. He leaves no room, no doubt. We're going to look at that briefly today. It's die to self. You turn a 180. You are following Jesus. It's not about your stuff. It's not about your mission anymore. You're on his mission. You belong. He purchased. You belong to him. Yet, he's so patient with the failings of his people. So you watch Peter and you go, this guy, he's going to be the man. He's going to be the main one. How is this going to happen? And you watch Peter fail, and you watch him have faith, and you watch him fail, and you watch him, and you see Jesus just bring him along. So you see that balance that man cannot strike. It's this idea of it's all or nothing. Yet you see this patience, you see this gentle bringing along that Jesus does. So there's this balance that only he can strike, and as we follow him, we too began to be able to strike this balance in the church of having such a patience with those that fall, a loving kindness, yet an expectation that people will forsake all and follow Christ, that is the only way. That's the only standard. And so there's a balance there. And I think as we get into this, that's one thing the Gospels do. They bring you that balance. It comes from Jesus himself. And so last week, you know, we looked at this thing that pleases Jesus. And from 2 weeks ago when we covered that, every time I come up against a difficult situation, do you have those every week? A difficult something comes up. You don't know the answer to it. You don't know how to handle it. There's an opportunity. Am I going to trust Him? And it's like, you know, when Peter got out of that boat, he's walking to Jesus. Jesus is not going, he ain't going to make it. He's walking on, yeah, he's not, he's going to sink. That's not, he's saying, come on, Peter, come on. Trust me with all you have. Yeah, there's a storm, but look at me. Come on, put your trust in me. Do not look at that circumstance. You come to me, Peter. That's Jesus. And then, man, you just could have trusted me. Why didn't you trust me, Peter? And then when they trust Him, there's nothing that excites Jesus more. There's nothing that excites Him more than our faith. When we put our trust in Him, small, trivial things, but when we trust Him, He is pleased. It pleases Him. But when we don't trust Him, when there is a lack of faith, Jesus deals with that. That's a primary thing that we've learned that Jesus expected of His men. He wanted them to put their trust in Him. And then this week we're going to look at three more things, but faith is always intertwined in here. And we looked at, remember we brought that up? Every time I think about faith, I think about Stephen. I think about he preached the word faithfully, and for that, what did he get? Stoned. People throwing rocks at him until he died. Yet, through that whole thing, start to finish, he had to trust God to preach the message. I know what that feels like. I don't have anything, God. Well, just trust me. He had to trust God to preach the message, and he preached powerfully. And then he had to trust God as things are falling apart. And it says that Jesus standing at the right hand of God. I think it was his faith that made Jesus stand up. It was the hope that Peter was going to trust him that made him reach out his hand. He was desiring. He wanted faith more. That's what he wanted. Obedience will come. If you have faith, obedience will come. Holiness will come. Righteousness will come. It better come or it's not real faith. But he's looking for us to trust him in whatever thing that's going on. However difficult or however much you fail, he's looking for you to trust. And that, he stood up and said, Jesus standing at the right hand. I think that made Jesus stand up. Look, there's my man. I've given him nothing in the circumstances to alleviate him, but he is trusting me. And that brings him joy. You see that. You read through the Gospels looking for this, you will see it over and over. It brings Jesus joy when his people put their trust in him. That's a primary element to what he was teaching his disciples. That's what he was teaching them. Trust me. Look to me. The storm is fierce. Look to me. Put your trust in me. I got it. So that brings us, you remember last week that, or the week before last, Jesus gave a hard teaching. You see, their hearts were looking for the wrong thing, so they didn't get the aroma of life. He was giving them the aroma. All they heard was, eat my flesh and drink my blood. Remember? When they were just looking to be fed. And he's saying, I will give you eternal life. And they really weren't interested. They just wanted their needs met. That will never fly with Jesus. That will never fly. I just want my needs met. I just want a job. I just want plenty to eat. I just want transportation. I just want a house. I just want a wife. I just want a husband. I just want my needs met. Yeah, Jesus meets our needs. But that is not what he's looking for from a person. That's not what he's looking for. He wants us to look to him. To him. And that pleases him. And they refused to do that. When they heard the hard truth, it wasn't all about them. They left. Maybe that truth ought to be preached in churches today to thin the ranks a little bit. Because while Jesus was sad to see them go, he knew it needed to happen. He knew he was grieved that they left, but he preferred it. He preferred that they leave than to stay and not have faith. That was his attitude. Then he looked to his men. Will you too leave? You see, the little bit they understood, they knew that he was life. Where else are we going to go? There's no place else we can go. We can go to the grocery store. We can go to the market. We can get bread. We can get fish. But you are the one that has eternal life. And that's what he was looking for from them. And so the crowds left. His popularity waned. But, you know, you travel around a little more. You do a few more miracles. His popularity increases again. He finds himself in a similar situation. We're in Matthew 15. At the end of the chapter. A crowd gathers. This time this crowd of 4,000. The same thing happens again. They're there. He performs a miracle. He feeds them. The disciples have to go through the same problem. How many times do you have to cross the same bridge before you learn the lesson? These guys, they were on an intensive plan and they crossed the bridge many, many times. They crossed this bridge. They had to see Jesus feed the 4,000. He had to give them the bread. They had to hand it out. The same thing. They had to trust Him, not what they could do. They had to trust Him. And they gave out the bread. Same thing again. It happens again right there at the end of chapter 15. And then the Pharisees come and began asking him tricky questions. And here we are in chapter 16. Let's just read this briefly, okay? We're not going to go into detail here. We're going to try to cover most of this chapter today, so we won't have a lot of detail. And the Pharisees and Sadducees came to test him. Pharisees and Sadducees, those guys are not the same, okay? There's liberals and conservatives, there's Democrats and Republicans. The Pharisees are the conservatives. The Sadducees are the liberals. So these guys they're enemies. They don't have much in common, except they're both against Jesus. So they came together. So what you have are these really moral guys, and then you have these worldly guys. The Sadducees were worldly. They were all about this life. The Pharisees, they were very religious people, very moral people. But neither one of them were what Jesus was looking for. So, there's very different guys there. They came to test him and they asked him to show them a sign from heaven. He answered them, "When it is evening, you say it will be fair weather for the sky is red, and in the morning it will be stormy for the sky is red and threatening. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah." So he left them and departed. You know, if you happen to be reading along in your NIV that's in the pew, I'm reading from the ESV today. my NIV came apart, and so I'm with this for a little while. They were not listening. And Jesus, in a sense, he's like, they do not have faith. Their hearts are hard. Their hearts are rebellious. They're not hearing what I'm saying. And I'm going to get my guys out of here. We're leaving. We're not going to hang with these ones. They are headed in the wrong direction and they're not listening. We're out of here. They get in the boat and they leave. Now, they've forgotten all about what happened back there. They forgot about the conversations with the Sadducees and the Pharisees. Jesus is still thinking about it. It's still troubling him. So we'll start up with verse 5, chapter 16. When the disciples reached the other side, they had forgotten to bring any bread. Jesus said to them, "Watch and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." And they began discussing it among themselves, saying, "We brought no bread." But Jesus, aware of this, said, have you heard this before? "O you of little faith, why are you discussing among yourselves the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive? Do you not remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many baskets you gathered? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many baskets you gathered? How is it that you fail to understand that I did not speak about bread? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Then they understood that he did not tell them to be aware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Sadducees and the Pharisees. You see, the Sadducees and Pharisees, they wanted a sign. They wanted something from heaven. They wanted something outlandish. They wanted something for themselves. They were not really looking for the truth because there were signs all around Jesus. There was Jesus himself. There was Jesus living this perfect life. Not just morally, but this powerful teaching, this perfect life. There was just the signs of Jesus Himself. There were the signs of the times in general that the Old Testament, if they were following and honestly looking, that they would see that the times were right for the Messiah to come. And they would see His love for the sheep. They would see the miracles. But you see, they pretend spirituality by desiring a sign, a miracle. Just because somebody has an interest in spiritual things does not mean they have true spiritual desire. They may like Christian music. They may want to see miracles performed. They want to be around all this stuff if it's exciting. That does not mean anything. That does not mean someone has true spiritual desire. And he's saying about the Sadducees and Pharisees, they do not have true spiritual desire. Their hearts are, in fact, while they pretend to be spiritually interested, their hearts are so hard they cannot understand or perceive a word that I'm saying. They have unbelief. And this causes they do not understand and their teaching is false. And so he's warning them really about the leaven of their unbelief and their false teaching. Do you know what leaven is? So I talked to my mom last night. And I said, tell me how you make that sourdough bread. My mom makes the best sourdough bread you've ever had. So she takes this little mason jar, you know, and she puts some like potato flakes and some sugar in there, and she mashes it together, and it starts growing, you know, it's fermenting, I guess, and it's growing in there. And then she takes the dough and mixes it all up. And she takes a cup. You see, leaven is in the NIV it says yeast. It's any kind of thing that makes the bread rise is what it's talking about. Leaven, am I right on this? Ladies, any kind of thing that makes the bread rise would be leaven. So yeast is a type of leaven. So you just take a cup of that and you put it in this big batch of dough. And you mix it in there and you let it sit. And it sits for a while. Miraculously, mysteriously, strangely, it works its way through this big thing of dough. It just works its way through it. And the whole thing will rise then. So that little cup of leaven has impacted this whole big batch of dough. And Jesus uses that as an example. He's saying that's why we left those guys on the lake. We did not want the leaven of what they're saying, even the way they're asking questions. We did not want that. I don't want that mixed up with you. I don't want you having that kind of unbelief. I don't want you to have the blindness, pride, self-focus. You see, that unbelief that showed itself in their blindness, their pride, their self-focus, that brought Jesus to anger and impatience more than anything else he ran into. That hard heart, unbelief, refusal to see their sin, pride, self-righteousness, self-focus, that brought him anger like nothing else. And Jesus is going to warn them in detail about that. Not just here, but other places. So, you remember he uses physical things. This thing's real. This thing of leaven and bread. He uses that to illustrate a spiritual truth. But they're so preoccupied with the physical that they don't recognize the spiritual. They're preoccupied with their physical needs and they fail to understand that Jesus' reference to leaven is figurative. And Jesus rebukes them. How can you rebuke somebody for not understanding? Shouldn't you just be patient and explain it to them again if they don't understand? Isn't that the way we think? And a lot of times that's true. But see, Jesus could see to their heart. The reason they didn't understand, they were about themselves and their physical needs. That's their heart. That's with their heart. They were not faithful. So they did not understand. And so he rebukes them about their heart because they didn't understand what he was saying. It was a heart problem, not a head problem. That was their issue. And Jesus would often refer to, he would use heavenly things, but he would use the medium of earthly things to explain them. How do the things we value and the things we do reflect the heavenly? Are we always thinking about, if I do this thing, if I buy this house, if I buy this car, if I take this job, how does that impact the eternal? You see, how does that, the physical things do I just look at my life and how these things impact me in this life and the here and now and how it meets my needs and how it pleases me? Or am I concerned more about the mission of God and how I should go through a process? I'm going to do this. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go. I'm going to join this club. I'm going to take this class. I'm going to take this job. I'm going to buy these shoes. Whatever it is. Even if it's just a minor thing. How does this impact heavenly things? What's the real weight of this? How does this impact my ability to make disciples? How does this impact my effectiveness in the kingdom? You see, 90%, I read this in a survey, 90.5%, I'm just kidding, of Christians never think about that. They buy a house, they buy a car, they just get what they want. They ask God for it. Oh, help me to afford this, I need it. No, how does that impact your mission? How do the physical things impact the eternal things? You see, that's how Jesus thought. That was his, he's conveying this to them. And they don't get it. He's talking about leaven and bread. Oh yeah, we're familiar with that stuff. Yeah, we should have brought some bread. Guys, wake up. Wake up. That's not what I'm talking about. They needed to have more eternal desire. They needed to look at the things of this earth and how they affect eternal things instead of just how it meets their need. You see, their lack of faith. Listen to this. Okay. You have a lack of faith. Let's say you have a lack of faith. What's your concern about that? You know what most people's concern about having a lack of faith is? I'll be worried. I'll be anxious. I won't be happy if I have a lack of faith. If I have faith, then I'll be at peace and I'll be happy. You see, that's not the point. Yeah, that is true. That is true. But it's not the point. Their lack of faith did not just cause them worry and anxiousness. It blinded them. It blinded them to deeper spiritual truths. It was not about this just being peaceful, happy in life, but it blinded them to deeper spiritual truths, and they were not ready to hear because they did not have faith. Do you know how many things just fly right over your head? Because you don't have faith. It's not because you are dense. It's because your focus is in the wrong place. We don't even know how much we're missing because we don't have faith. If we have faith, you see, we will catch these things that Jesus is telling us and that He's trying to communicate to us. They were not ready to hear. They simply missed the point because of their earthly focus. They were earthly focused. They were concerned about the things of this life. And Jesus is basically saying, I can take care of all those things. Did you see? I just fed them out of nothing. I can feed you out of nothing. If I want you to be hungry a little bit, I'll let you be hungry a little bit. But I can feed you. You're worried about the earthly things. It's not saying don't be responsible and don't work and don't save money and don't go into debt. I shouldn't have to explain that to you even. You see what I'm saying? But he's saying, don't get caught up in the things of this world. How do these things of this world impact your eternity? Now that counts for something. But you will never hear if you do not have faith. Blinded by a lack of faith. They were unaware of what they were missing. They were just going right over their head. They were unaware because they didn't have faith. They were completely unaware. They didn't even see the red flags. They were distracted by the no bread thing and completely unaware of the danger that Jesus was warning them of. There's danger. You better be alert. This is serious stuff. What? 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 I just want a sandwich. Their focus was completely off. They were unaware of what they were missing. They were blinded by their lack of faith and distraction of the things of this world. That's what was important to them. And you'll see Jesus correct that over and over and over again. The distraction of the things of the world. Their real interest, their real heart was for temporal things. And you see, the church has caught on to this, and the church says, we'll meet your temporal needs. We'll give you programs, and we'll give you some friends. We'll even, if you're tend to that, we'll even throw in some miracles here and there. And we'll make sure you're good and healthy, and we'll make sure everything's right for you. And Jesus is going, what? If I want to take care of that, I got it. I got it. You put your trust in me, I'll take care of that. I want you to be concerned about the things that matter. I want you to be concerned about my mission. I want you to be concerned about people that are spending eternity apart from me. I want you to see people grow up in the Lord. I want you to care about the things I care about. Have faith. He's given them a broad spiritual truth about. You see this idea of leaven. It's like this. It's a broad spiritual truth. They're going to have to learn this because they're going to need it in the church later. You see, Paul's going to need this when he sees these little things creep in, this bad doctrine, a wrong focus. And he's going to see that, and you'll see. So he's going to correct it. Well, come on, Paul. The Corinthians, they're doing fine. They're having these good services, and they're having good meals together. And Paul's going, no, that's leaven. That's bad doctrine in there. We're going to correct that. We're going to take care of it. We're going to deal with it. Same thing with this leaven of unbelief. Yeah, but they're doing fine. There's no moral failure. They read their Bible every day, but don't see any faith. I don't see anybody stepping out of the boat. I don't see anybody taking any risk for God. That's a red flag that is rarely addressed. Where's your faith? Where's your faith? That's a red flag because you're missing much if there is no faith. How many times have I seen something in a person's life and they refuse to be warned about it? Leaven. And gradually, without any huge red flags, it works its way through the whole dough, and they become blind and ineffective, and they never even know it. Never even know it. You see, they refuse to be warned because their eyes are on this world, because they don't have real faith. So when the warning comes, they don't receive it. And then the leaven works its way through the whole batch, and they become really useless in God's purpose, in God's mission in the world and what He's doing. And they don't even know it. Blind. Blind. That's what He's saying. You become blind to these things. And as I mentioned before, one of these groups, the Pharisees, were religious. The Sadducees were worldly. But they were both living for this life, and both were deceptively self-focused, and both were lacking faith. So you can say, look at this group over here. They're moral. They want to do the right thing. But you see, it takes more than that. They're living for this life. They're deceptively self-focused and lacking faith. And they never even see the red flags. And they say, but they're on our team. But where's the faith? Where's the faith? You cannot corral wrong thinking, lack of faith, hard heart, bad attitude, bitterness. You can't corral that into this little section of your life. It just, miraculously, mysteriously, it works its way through the whole dough. Gradually, we have to eradicate those things that are brought to our attention. We have to have faith that God can do it. We have to desire the eternal more than the temporal. And we have to deal with those things, the leaven. And that's what Jesus is saying. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees. Well, what are you talking about? Those are pretty good guys. They have unbelief. Don't let that into your life. And Sadducees, they have a worldly perspective. They just want the things of this world. They both have the same issue of a lack of faith. So this is a principle that He's teaching them, because He's going to use the same thing to teach them about their influence in the world. He's going to teach them that if they are the aroma of Christ, if they're really following Jesus, they have an eternal perspective. Earlier in Matthew, He's going to say, you will be like leaven. You will infiltrate the world. And pretty soon, all the people around you will be impacted and affected because you are following Jesus and you're the aroma of Christ. You're the yeast of Me. And you'll impact all those around you. There's a spiritual principle there, and He uses leaven or yeast to illustrate it. It could be an attitude, as we said, a doctrine, bitterness, self-focus. This is huge in this. Self-focus is a blinding, blinding thing. How do you deal with self-focus? Faith. There has to be a true faith, a willingness, a desire for God above protecting yourself. And then you know what will happen? Somebody will speak into your life because you're willing to hear. Well, nobody's telling me. That doesn't mean anything. Because people are afraid to tell you if you have a real strong self-focus. Because they don't want to get what comes back at them. Self-focus, it stops people from ever having input into your life. When there's real faith, you see, God is, you're trusting Him to reveal to you. And that God will bring people into your life that, if you're open to hearing about the leaven before it takes over, before it permeates the rest of your life. What is this? He's saying, stay alert. Allow input. Have faith. Be eternally focused, not temporally minded, and be willing to get out of the boat. Trust me. Sometimes I think we get here by just this infinite number of small choices. Just this infinite number of temporal choices, self choices. We make a little choice here, we make a little choice there, and pretty soon the leaven of self has permeated our life and we no longer see the red flags. We're ate up with self and we're deaf to the voice of the shepherd. We must deal with those things when God reveals them. The voice doesn't get stronger, it gets weaker and our faith diminishes. We become ineffective in what He's called us to. So, they go on from here. And Jesus gets along with, they understand, they finally get this truth. And then they go north from the Sea of Galilee. They head north to the district of Caesarea Philippi. And there Jesus has an important discussion. This is the second thing He's going to teach them in this chapter here. He has an important discussion with His disciples. And He asks them some questions. So let's look at this. That's part C on your outline and verse 13. Now Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi. He asked His disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of His prophets." You see, this was a compliment. In human terms, this was a compliment. Wouldn't you like to be associated with John the Baptist? I would like for somebody to say, "Man, you're like John the Baptist, Steve. You're like Jeremiah." I'd say, "Whoa. You know, that's a pretty big compliment." And see, all these things are legitimate things that people have seen in Jesus. He's a little bit like John the Baptist about repentance. He's a little bit like Jeremiah. He's a little bit like Elijah, this powerful prophet, this one, this warning, and this other, this preaching. He's a little bit like all these guys. But they're so, you know, when something's like it's seen, it's close, so it fools you, but it is so off and so wrong. These guys, they are so far from the truth. Because Jesus is not just a man. He is far beyond these guys. And so God has emotions. You see, God can be disappointed. He can be pleased. And He's with His guys, His men there. And He says, "But who do you say I am? You're the ones. Who do you say I am? And who do you think speaks up?" Simon Peter. Simon Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are the Messiah we've been waiting for, but we've been waiting for a man, but you're not a man. You are Christ, God the Son." And Jesus goes, "Whoa. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Peter, for your faith. You believe." You see Jesus in this moment. I think it's an emotional moment for Jesus. He's overwhelmed. And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but My Father who is in heaven." This is a revelation for God because you don't have the faculties to understand this. You don't have it. You come from all this Jewish, such a strict monotheism, this one God. There is one God. Of course, that's right. But they were refusing to look at what God was telling. You've got to remember what Peter came out of here, this Jewish heritage. And yet he's saying, this guy that is flesh and blood, that's saying, "I am God. I am deity." And Peter's going, "You are deity. You are God the Son, and I put My faith in You above everything else. You are the One." And Jesus is overwhelmed with joy. He knows Peter's about to fail in just a few minutes. He's going to crumble in a minute. But he has faith right now. And Jesus is pleased with that faith. And on what that statement that Peter makes, and on his preaching in a sense of that, on that statement of faith that Jesus is deity, that he came to save the world of sin, a perfect sacrifice, and to rise again, the church is going to be built on this. Now it's just a germ, it's just a seed of the truth. But this is what the church is going to be built on. And I tell you, in verse 18, and I tell you, you are Peter. You are Petros. You are Peter. You are the rock man. You are solid. You are like I predicted you would be. Now you're shining. You're being what I said you were going to be when you weren't. But now you are the rock. And on this Petro rock, on this foundation, of what we're discussing here, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. You see, now the Catholic Church, we know the Roman Catholic Church went awry with this verse. And they've said that Peter's starts this line of infallible popes, and these, and they're going to speak direct words for God. How that comes out of that verse, I have no idea. But we won't get into all that. But he's not saying that the church will be built on just this man, Peter. Peter's a representative here. We know that Jesus is the cornerstone. The church is built on Jesus, but the foundation of the church is the apostles. Let's read a couple verses that relate to this. You, representative of the others, but you and the others, Peter, are going to be the foundation of the church. Galatians 2:9. And when James, Cephas, and John, who seem to be pillars, received the grace that was given me. So he's saying these guys are the pillars of the church, and Ephesians 2:20. We're going to these verses and spending just a moment. We're pausing over this because there's a lot of confusion in some circles over this verse. 2:20 says, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone. Built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure being joined together grows into a holy temple to the Lord. And then 1 Peter, for the last one, 1 Peter 1, 2, 1 Peter 2, 4 through 4 and 5. Sorry. As, remember, this is Peter talking here. This is Peter writing this. As you come to him, a living stone, Petros, rejected by men, but in the sight of God, chosen and precious. You yourselves are like living stones being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifice acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For it stands in Scripture, behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, Petra, a cornerstone chosen and precious, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. So, the church itself is not built on the man, Peter, but it is built on this. He is a foundational stone within there, and it's built on what he's saying, that Jesus, you are the Messiah, you are God the Son, you are deity. On this foundational truth, the church is built. And so the word here, ecclesia, the called out ones, is what's used for the church. This is really the first mention of the church, so it's not explained in detail here. It's just the very first, just the beginnings of understanding going on here. So this deeply emotional statement by Jesus, this is what you have to get a feel for what Jesus, how he's saying this and what it means to him that Peter believes, that Peter understands. Well, first that he believes and that he understands. And he is moved by Peter's faith because Peter did not shrink back from this bold assertion, even considering his history and who he was. And then he promises there next that the gates of hell will not prevail against us. The church will not be defeated. That now, this church could be defeated if we don't trust God. We're always in danger of falling. That's not heresy. The church as a whole will never be defeated. The church will be here. But we have to be alert. Because we could have leaven come in here. We could have those that would cut and destroy and divide. And we could have bad doctrine. So we have to be careful. We have to be alert. We can't just sit back and say, oh, we're not going to be destroyed. No, this local body could be destroyed. Now, you personally will not lose your salvation, but this body could be destroyed. That's not God's intent. But we have to be alert. Leaven could come in and work through. Bad thinking, division, destruction could come. So we have, the church as a whole, though, will stand. And then Jesus gives recognition of the one who has boldly stated this truth about Jesus. And then verse 19, I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Now, there's people apply all sorts of crazy stuff to these verses. But the kingdom of heaven, you know, Peter preached that first sermon to the Jews in Acts 2. And the kingdom of heaven was opened. People came streaming in to the kingdom of heaven. People were saved. And you know, he preached this first sermon to the Samaritans in Acts chapter 8. And the kingdom of heaven was opened and the Samaritans came streaming in. And then in Acts 10, Peter again was responsible for opening the door to heaven, in a sense. He preached the sermon that the first big incoming of the Gentiles came in. Now, all of us have the keys to heaven. This is not just to Peter. We have the keys to heaven in the sense we have the gospel. That's the key to heaven. That's how we get into heaven. That's how the door is open. Because we put our trust in the sacrificial, the substitutional death of Jesus, His death, burial, and resurrection. We put our trust in Him and we are saved. That's the gospel. And that's the key to heaven. It's the only way to come into heaven. And, well, let's move on here. Verse 19. Then, well, I guess we're still, the last verse, then He strictly charged the disciples to tell no one that He was the Christ. That was going to be Jesus telling it the way He decided to tell it at that time. So they had, these disciples were going to have authority in the church, and that authority, there was going to be authority in the church, that they were going to have actual authority that is delegated authority. Jesus is the head of the church, but the church itself has authority, and leadership in the church, even today, has authority. Now that's out of balance. You know what I'm saying? That the church, but the authority we see in the church today is out of balance. Sometimes there's too much authority. And sometimes there's not enough authority. But when we follow the scripture, then there's authority that is given to the leaders of the church and to one another to correct, to defend, to teach, to discipline. This delegated authority, though, Jesus has the authority as the head of the church. So, looks like we're kind of running out of time here. Our third thing that we're wanting to cover was Jesus. After this, Jesus gives His first real lesson on the cross. We're winding down here. You see that happening? We're here in Acts chapter 16, the end of chapter 16. The end is in sight. Now Jesus is going to teach them about the cross. He's going to speak to them openly. And this is when Peter messes up. He's going to speak to them openly about that I'm, you know, these guys, these Pharisees, these Sadducees, they're gonna kill me. They're gonna put me on a cross. I'm gonna die, but I'm gonna rise again. And He's gonna explain this to them. But in the midst of explaining this to them, and what we will get into, let's look at this. Just let's read it so you can be thinking about it this week. In Matthew 16, let's go to verse 24. We'll cover this in more detail next week. Then Jesus told His disciples, if anyone would come after Me, and He said to them, look, you think that was hard to hear about Me going to the cross? Well, let Me tell you something. You too are going to go to the cross. You too must die. He goes back to this thing of self. You must die daily. Deny Himself, take up His cross, and follow Me. You see, there's only one way to follow Jesus. What did I tell you? I told you about His patience. He brings people. There's only one way to follow Jesus. It's you die to self. You leave self behind and you follow Him with your whole heart. And then comes fruit. And then comes ministry. Anything else, and what Jesus is saying to Peter is, this earthly self-focus you have is a hindrance to Me, Peter. You are hindering My work by your self-focus. If you are not dying to self daily, then you are hindering the work of Christ. And that's what he's saying there. So he's going to introduce, and we'll introduce this next week, we'll go into more detail, this shocking picture of discipleship. This is a shocking picture of discipleship. For you must take up your cross daily, deny yourself, and follow me. So those are the three, those are the basic three messages that he has. The leaven, the faith in who Jesus really is, and this dying to self. You see, we're getting here where Jesus is packing this truth in for these guys. He's packing it in and he's putting it on them. And he's wanting them to have faith so that they can get it. So that they can understand it and they can live it. And he's always going back to faith. That'll be next week.